All right, good evening. Welcome. We are in lesson 9. I feel like there's a lot of feedback. Maybe I'll back up. Lesson 9, Life of Christ. Let's see. Bonus question here. No prizes, but a bonus question. Does anybody remember what we studied last week? Miracles. That's right. And I could say it's a miracle anybody remembered, but that would be misusing the word miracle. Tammy got it right, yes. We talked about miracles. So we have 3 Sundays left. We're going to spend tonight. I doubt we can get through everything tonight, so we'll probably spend 2 nights talking about the last week of Christ, including going to the cross, and then the final week we'll wrap it up with the resurrection. If you're new to class, and even if you're not, this might help remind us what we're doing here. We're studying the life of Christ. We're Christians. And so in order to be Christians, Jesus commands us in Luke 6:46, why do you call me Lord, Lord, and not do what I tell you? So instead of using the wristband, what would Jesus do, to guide our faith, and that's how we conduct ourselves outside these walls, why don't we, novel idea, spend time actually in the Gospels and seeing what Jesus actually did and what did he actually command versus what I feel he wants me to do. So part of this is to help us have a better understanding of what Jesus actually did while he was here on earth. And then, what did he tell us to do? What was Jesus' mission on this earth? And his mission was to save the world. So as his followers, that's part of our mission as well, is to save lost souls. And so this class is to help us in those 2 areas. Quick background. Last week, adding to the list, we talked about miracles. The faith often produced the miracles. The miracles were not done to produce the faith. We can get that because Jesus said, don't tell anyone, right? Many times after performing the miracles, Jesus would kind of quiet that down and say, don't tell anyone. And the reason is because a faith with the expectation of miracles being what's going to happen is you become a Christian and now you expect miracles to happen for you. That's a shallow faith, and that really isn't consistent with Jesus, all his other teachings. So he wasn't here to do all miracles all the time. And so if you expect the spectacular, you've missed the message. And so really another way to look at these miracles, it's really a glimpse of the perfect future. We get a chance to see what healing will look like. We get a chance to see what the world could possibly look like if sin hadn't entered the world. So as I said, now we're up to the final week. So let me give you a little quiz before we go into the final week. How many Gospels mention his birth? 2. How many pages are spent on the resurrection? Just a few, right? So you only have 2 Gospels talking about his birth, a few spent on the resurrection, but how does that compare to the amount of time the Gospels devote to the final week? Well, all 4 Gospels spend a fair amount of time, a very lengthy amount of time, you could say a disproportionate amount of time on that final week. It is just rich with information, rich in meaning, and it's very transformative to spend a lot of time walking through the final week of Jesus' life, because he was sent on this earth and everything from the moment of his birth was leading up to the moment on the cross. And so the gospel narratives slow everything down when we get to that final week and we get a kind of a day-by-day, blow-by-blow account of what's about to happen. So, it ought to clue us in as readers that this was important to those gospel writers. There must be a lot of material in there for us and a lot of application for us. Think about what was happening. Nothing in history really compares to this event. How could it be, if you think of it from some of the questions you ask yourself, is how could it be that a Messiah should ever face defeat? Wow, that seems weird. Here's a King of Kings, and yet he's ultimately at the end of this week going to be put on a cross. The rule of government, the rulers of the government were, by the end of that week, Jesus had the rulers of the government against him, and he had the religious leaders of his own faith against him. So it was quite a week for him. It starts with his triumphal entry and ends with him hanging on a cross. So a lot of things happen from the beginning of Sunday to Friday. So part of what we're gonna try to do is unpack some of the events that happened. And how and why could it be that a God is crucified? And as a man, does that make sense? You know, you think about the gods that, the pagan gods, they didn't create these gods where their gods were crucified, where their gods were considered meek and weak and powerless. So what's going on with God and Jesus? He's hanging on the cross. Where are the miracles to save him now, right? What about a supernatural rescue? All these thoughts are going on this final week. You're just trying to set up what's happening in this final week. And the cross has been his goal. Think about if you're the disciples and you've been following this guy around for 3 years. And so he gathers them together in the room of the Last Supper. They may be thinking, if you're the disciples, you may be saying, gee, should I be replacing Egypt with Rome, right? The great deliverance is finally here. This must be what Jesus is talking about, his kingdom being established in 3 days. So even we know they didn't understand what he was really talking about, the spiritual kingdom. They're thinking, this is it. We're Jewish, so every year we remember the Passover. We remember God answers our prayers as a nation throughout time. And this must be the next big moment. This is when Jesus will finally accede and become the next King David. You know, that's the perspective they were sitting in that week. But that's what happens in the Lord's Supper, or the Last Supper. What happens after that? It's completely opposite of what they expected to see. You had the betrayal, the trial, and the death. And so it's hard for us to recapture that end of the world feeling that descended upon Jesus and his follower that week. We know how this story works out. You know, you can watch a movie over and over and over, or read your favorite book over and over, and some of the suspense is gone because you know how it ends. And so the danger is we treat the gospel, and we treat the final week, and we treat the cross and the resurrection as just something, a story we're familiar with. So we've really taken this passage, if you will, that's full of colors and themes, and we turn it into a black and white event. We turn it into something we already know. And so what I want to challenge us tonight as we study through this lesson, is how can we understand what was at stake? How can we understand the drama of the times? So I want us to be a witness. I want us to pretend or set aside what we already know. Try to place ourselves as someone who is following around the crowds that day, that week. And what are some of the events? So as if we were there. The triumph, we're going to spend time talking about those events, and it'll take us a couple weeks. And as you know, I've tried to show a video clip, one, just to break it up, because just to hear talk speaking for a while sometimes can be mind-numbing at best, so I understand that. So I try to break it up with a relevant video. Some have been kind of comical events, but really with the same theme in mind. Sometimes we've done a movie that's based on the life of Jesus. So this week, these next 2 weeks, I have found videos for each one of those events. So what I want to do is help us create, I want to try to recreate the drama and the end. You know, there's nothing like this has ever happened in the world before. This is the most important week in the history of mankind. All of history from God's creation until this week has been pointing towards this week. This is just a monumental week in the history of man. And so we need to spend some time on there, but we need to understand it from a sense of we don't know what the ending is. So to do that, we're gonna watch a few videos. Some of them, one of the clips might even be 7 minutes long. So bear with me. Usually I like to just do 2 or 3 minutes, but it was hard to find the clips that that would do that. So what we'll do is we'll watch a clip, and then we'll just try to unpack that event and see what we can learn from it, as if we're seeing this event without a lot of the prior knowledge. So as if we're living in the times. So that said, William, will you show us video one, the triumphal entry? All right. Does anybody know what chapter that event where he talks to Barabbas is in? Sorry about that one. But again, it's just to help us recreate the scene there. All right. So we talked about the triumphal entry. So what are our thoughts when we see this video, when we read this scene? As these are things that jumped out to me. It's in all four Gospels. Well, how did Jesus typically react to displays of a fanatic kingdom? When prior to this week, when they tried to make him king or exalt him or push him forward, what was his typical reaction? He usually rejected that or said, not now. Now is not my time. Well, this is the first time where we see Jesus letting them acknowledge him as king. His time has come. He is about to establish the kingdom. And so he is now, as part of this week, he is now for the first time acknowledging that he is the king. Does anybody remember what miracle kind of preceded where we're at with the triumphal entry? The raising of Lazarus. So we're not far from the raising of Lazarus, and that's the one that really started getting the authorities and the religious leaders mad and irate, and the plot to kill Jesus really began after that time. So we're not far from that event. What I thought was interesting, you guys move the slides up for me. Gotcha. Thank you. So here's what I thought was odd or interesting. When you read the text, and from watching the video, they kind of alluded to this. But pretend you're a Roman officer sent to check on the disturbance. What do you see? You're told that this king is coming, and so as the Roman authority, like, uh-oh, who is coming to take over? You better go check this out, because there's a great and powerful king coming, and we need to preserve our kingdom. And so what do they see? They expected to maybe see a king, right, with a chariot of gold, with a powerful army, with the spoils of victory behind him. And it's almost comical, right? Because what do you see? A man on a donkey? They even said that. This is their king, and this is who we're worried about? This is no king. This is a man on a donkey. A donkey is not an animal that you look to and go, this is a majestic horse or a gold chariot. It's a donkey. It's plowing. He's used to, you know, work the fields. And so this is what their king is riding on. What I also think is you expect the polished army and the banners and, like I said, the spoils of victory. But look who's following Jesus. You could even get a sense of it in this video, right? You had the blind. You had the lame. You had children. These were peasants from Galilee and Bethany following Jesus. Not really what you thought of when you thought to expect to see a king enter and take over a city. Right? So again, something different, and it just goes, something's different about what Jesus is trying to establish versus what everybody else thinks Jesus is trying to establish. But it makes the authorities nervous, but it's almost a little comical. I can imagine the Roman soldier getting there and just the Roman soldier and laughing a little bit, like, we got nothing to worry about here, guys. He's got a donkey and a bunch of peasants behind him. Yes, Tammy. Yeah. And, you know, Isaiah tells us that he's nothing different. He was, yes, true. All the depictions you see of Jesus is, if he wasn't our Savior, he would be a model, okay? So, right, we know from Isaiah that was not true, and right. Another question. Good point. As a carpenter, he's probably very used to physical and manual labor, right? So he's probably obviously physically strong. And to endure I think the beating that he's about to go through and really shows you again how he wasn't physically strong shape. So he was, certainly was that. All right, so there's two videos here. We're going to watch them back to back. One's a little long, one's a little short, but let's watch the Lord's Supper. We go from here to the Lord's Supper. All right, so we had the Lord's Supper, and if you all remember, part of the Lord's Supper was the washing of the feet. So Jesus is conferring on them a kingdom. Again, I can imagine the disciples are gathered there. They just had the triumphal entry. And just the look of shock on their faces then when Jesus, because they think, you know, the kingdom has finally come, the earthly kingdom, and we're now like Moses was delivered from Egypt, we are now going to be delivered from Rome. And then Jesus said to them, this is the last meal I'll eat with you before I die. I can't imagine what it would be like to be in that room and just go, what? You know, what do you mean? Before you die, we're at the height of our popularity. We are about to establish or reestablish Israel. You're not going to die. And it's just, you know, the when he says that in that movie and just the silence after that, I mean, it just cuts you to the core. Like, that is not what they expected to hear at that moment. I guarantee you that. They did not expect to hear that Jesus was about to die, and just the shock and disbelief. Talking about the washing of the feet. Again, we talked about that Jesus kind of, everything he did was standing what you expected upside down. Washing feet is not the action of a king. When think of the pagan gods don't go around and washing the people's feet. Up until that moment in time, and maybe still in the worldly, right, the point is to be on top so that other people will wash your feet. That is what all the kings up until that point did when they got on top. And so now here's Jesus about to become the king, and he stops what he's doing, and he washes their feet. He says, I confer on you a kingdom. So let's put those two moments together. What is he really saying? I'm washing your feet and I'm conferring a kingdom. What kind of kingdom is this? So there's a connection. Well, it's a kingdom based on service and humility, not power and authority. Completely upside down from what anybody expected to see of what any ruler had ever done. And furthermore, this is the last meal I'm going to share with you. It just can't fathom what that must have been like. And so the challenge that I have for us is for us to understand, try to recreate that moment. I wonder how long. We may not get through the commentary, but let's watch now a little bit about, before we get into there. So we have after the Lord's Supper. He goes out to pray. It's spring, and he takes his disciples and they go out. Normally, Jesus would go away and want to be alone. He knows where this week is headed, and so he actually wants his disciples around him now for this point. It gives you an appreciation for the human heart and the human fear. There was something going on that week, and it may have been, he may, in one sense, been afraid, maybe, of being alone with the Father at this time. Something could have been going on why he normally wanted to be alone with the Father. He was wanting his disciples. The fear, the pain, the suffering was just days away. And so I think at this point, his human side is starting to show for us. So let's watch the fourth video. You know, let me see how long is that fourth video, because I don't want to go over. Hold the cursor over. Can't tell. All right. Well, we'll watch it, and if we have time to discuss it. If not, we'll pick up here from here next Sunday. moments. Let's talk a little bit about what we're seeing here. In Matthew, I want to just kind of try to put ourselves into Jesus and just the fear that's got to be going through his mind now, that his, even though he knew his life was leading up to this moment, you know, it's very scared, right? It says in Matthew, he's sorrowful and troubled. Mark, he's deeply distressed. We know Jesus typically went away, right, and tried to get some isolation when it was time to pray. And yet on that night, what did he ask? He wanted them to stay awake. He wanted them with him. Tells you how alone he was feeling at that moment. He needed his disciples to stay awake from him. And so how do we know he was hurt? What was their response? What did his disciples do? They fell asleep. He's like, I've spent 3 years, done everything for you. How many times do we feel this way? I've done everything for you, and now it's your turn to help me, and you're not there for me. Jesus felt the same way that we feel when that happens to us. The ones he loved, the ones closest to him, fell asleep. After he just said, this is the last meal we'll have together. Oh, I think I'm going to go to bed now. I'm tired. He is. You can tell he's hurt by the response. He says, couldn't you even stay awake? Am I that meaningless to you? You just spent 3 years with me and you can't stay awake? It just touches you. If you just put yourself in that emotional place that he had to have been. And so the struggle begins. You see it in that prayer. He's saying, take this cup from me. He knows his whole purpose in life was to go to the cross, and yet he does not want to go to the cross. Is there another way? It says he prayed even more earnestly. He was in anguish. His sweat was like drops of blood. So what was the struggle? I think it was a struggle, one, of fear and pain. Some of us know personally, if you've had to go through like surgery, and you know the days leading up to that surgery and how that weighs on your mind and weighs on your heart, he had this with a crucifixion weighing before him. His death was, and so what I think is also weighing on his heart, for the first time in his life, he is going to experience God-forsakenness. He says it on the cross. The saddest words I think ever uttered. You can't read that passage, and we'll see in a little bit. It just emotionally will just wear you down. He says, my God. It says he cries, okay? He's crying out. This is not just some noble statement from the cross. This is a man, my God, why have you forsaken me? How many times have we felt that way ourselves, right? We're going through a difficult time. I've shared with you my sister passing away 11 years ago. Very similar feelings going through me at that point is we pray every day for 3 or 4 years for this healing and nothing happens. So Jesus, for the first time in his life, it's a state of being he'd never known, God-forsakenness. I put it this way, we'll wrap up on this thought. For all of us that have unanswered prayers, right? Prayed many times and had my prayers unanswered. Gethsemane really depicts the story of an unanswered prayer. So, you know, all the folks that go around, well, I prayed to God and it didn't work, so God must not care. Well, take him to the story in Gethsemane. It's the story of an answered prayer. It's a story of suffering that is not removed. There was total rejection of Jesus at that point in his life by the government, the religious leaders, disciples, everybody abandoned him in his great time of need. It must have felt as if God had turned away from him too. God, take this cup from me. He could have called the angels. He could have destroyed his accusers right there in the garden. He could have, you know, put them all down. He could have skipped the sacrifice. And yet we have a Savior that practiced what he preached. I'll close with this. Here at the cross is the man who loves his enemies, The man whose righteousness is greater than that of the Pharisees, who being rich became poor, who gives his robe to those who took his cloak, who prays for his enemies. The cross is not a detour or a hurdle on the way to the kingdom, nor is it the way to the kingdom. It is the kingdom come. Thank you for your attention this week. I appreciate your indulgence with video clips. If those annoy you, tell me, and I'll cut them back. We've got 3 clips next week, and we're going to take it from the trial to the moment when Jesus cries out, "Why have you forsaken me?" So please come back next week. We'll pull it all together, and I think there'll be some things about the cross and some lessons that we learned about the cross that we may not have learned before from a story we're very familiar with. So I appreciate your time. Thank you.